Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 27. I have your little devices, texts 11 and 12. Chapter title is Understanding Material Nature, which follows fundamental principles of material nature. In that chapter 26, it's this very mind-puzzling, detailed description of all of the elements of material nature, how the unfolding of creation takes place, you know, Sankhya philosophy. And at the conclusion, verse 72 of the previous chapter, the message is, therefore, through devotion, detachment, and advancement in spiritual knowledge acquired through concentrated devotional service, one should contemplate that super soul as present in this very body, although simultaneously apart from it. So, three things. All of Sankhya philosophy is very popular amongst the impersonalists. Super popular. They just haven't read that text. In other words, what's the purpose of analysis of the composition of the material world? Now, there's atheistic theories or atheistic conceptions of reality, and impersonal conceptions are part of that atheistic conception. Certainly, Kapiladeva isn't teaching atheism. Certainly, people take it, part of his teachings, carve out the devotional part and leave the part they like, the impersonal, you know, everything rests on Brahman message. But this is everything rests upon the Supreme. And so the purpose of Sankhya is to come to this stage where through knowledge cultivated by the medium of devotional service, to fix the mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotion. Remember, this is Satya Yuga when Kapiladeva appears. In fact, it's practically at the dawn of creation. He is a direct son of Lord Brahma, and Kardama Muni is a direct son of Lord Brahma, and Devahuti is the direct daughter of Manu. So this is like things are just getting going in the whole of at least the day of Brahma. So the dawn of the recreation, whether it's the first time around the original creation or the each day of Brahma, it's the same pattern. So what's the process of achieving spiritual perfection in Satyayuga? Dhyayate. It's meditation. So there's a meditation process, but we should not misunderstand, well, it's just meditation and there's no devotional service. That's a wrong understanding. Kapiladeva right here in this verse is teaching devotional service is the means of doing the Sankhya process properly. Devotional service is the proper way of doing the Sankhya process properly. And then the purpose of the analysis of matter and spirit is to then, without the bodily conception or misconception of self, in the spiritual conception of self, to fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotion and serve Him in that way. So then the next chapter begins, which is what we're discussing. Knowledge leads to detachment, jnana vairagya. So the first verse, which like sets the direction of the chapter, when the living entity is thus unaffected by the modes of nature, what do you do then? Because he is unchanging and does not claim proprietorship, he remains apart from the reactions of the modes. Although abiding in a material body, and material bodies, by the way, are influenced by the modes. It's just how material energy works. So it's not like when you become a transcendentalist, the modes stop. The modes continue, but you're not influenced by them. How is that? Consciousness fixed in transcendence. It says, like this, the example in Bhagavad Gita of the lotus that grows above the surface of the water. There may be a storm, and so the water is turbulent, but the lotus isn't turbulent because it's above the water. I mean, the stem may sway this way, that way, but the lotus remains undisturbed by the turbulence of the water. He remains apart from the reactions of the modes, although abiding in a material body, just as the sun remains aloof from his reflection on water. And that this metaphor, partly the reason besides like review and getting the context, this metaphor applies to the verses we're going to read. It's similar, not exactly the same, but similar metaphor is used. So what's being said? There's water and there's the sun. And the sun shines, and on the water there's the reflection of the sun. Question, is the reflection of the sun identical with the sun? Answer, no. Its reflection is not the object. But the reflection indicates the object. Otherwise there's no reflection. Then next, when there's no wind, the reflection is very clear. But when there's wind, the water is moving, and so the sun is both, appears to be, moving and distorted. Similarly, when one is influenced by the modes of nature, reality is but a reflection of that one's sense of reality is but a distortion of reality. There's no substance, and it's disturbed, like, you know, the mind. We all know what a disturbed mind is like. So the relief from the disturbed mind is fixing the mind driven by a spiritual conception, because the mind carries conceptions. Doesn't Krishna say that in Bhagavad Gita? The mind carries conceptions as the wind carries aromas. The mind carries conceptions. And if the mind is carrying a spiritual conception, that requires an intelligence that can grasp the spiritual conception. But the spiritual conception is going to be out of the grasp of the intelligence if the mind is holding on tightly to a material conception. So some process of releasing the mind. It's mantra. Mantra. Releasing the mind. So that the intelligence can then grasp and assist the mind to hold the spiritual conception. And then one can contemplate with a purified mind, with a spiritual conception, Supersoul or the Supreme Lord. One can see the sun, not just the reflection. although you may see there's also a reflection. The reflection is distorted, and there's no substance to it. And you can see that, like, you know, the body is there, and things happen. You get old, and so the impulses born of the modes of nature are pushing. You feel hungry, you feel tired, and so forth. You may feel whatever the feelings are, anger, lust, something. Pushings may be there, but aloof, and further aloof, further and further into the realm of transcendence, or proportionate to, like Bhaktisiddhanta's statement in Brahma Samhita, proportionate to the purification that comes from the process of devotional service itself. One can perceive the form, you know, of the Supreme Lord. Like one can see Vishnu Tattva or Krishna Tattva, the reality of Krishna, even in this circumstance. That's what he's teaching, that's what he's advocating. When the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego, identifying his body as the self, he becomes absorbed in material activities. By the influence of false ego, he thinks he's the proprietor of everything. Or at least his portion, his I and mine. The conditioned soul therefore transmigrates into different species of life, higher or lower, because of his association with the modes of material nature. Unless he is relieved of material activities, he has to accept this position because of his faulty work. Actually, a living entity is transcendental to a material existence, but because of his mentality lording it over material nature, his material existence, his material existential condition does not cease. And, here's another metaphor, just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. I don't know if you've ever in your life had a bad dream. You know, but the bad dream, you feel all those emotions of whatever that bad dream is. Although it's just a dream. And you wake up and whatever, the bad feeling from the bad dream is still there. The mind has been influenced by that. Like Prabhupada's repeated example is, in a dream, you may see yourself sitting on a throne. You're the king. Ah, the king. And then into the palace comes a tiger. Oh, a tiger! And you wake up crying. But there's no tiger and there's no throne. There's no kingdom. It's just a dream. Similarly, this place is like that. It's just but a dream. It's not, there's no substance to it. But it appears to be real. And we have feelings towards that which appears to be real. As we do in our sleep, we do in our so-called awake. It's just another kind of sleep. Sleep to our real identity. It is the duty of every conditioned soul to engage his polluted consciousness, which is now attached to material enjoyment and very serious devotional service, with detachment. Remember, this is all following all that rigorous Sankhya stuff. You know, the kind of verses that you want to just like go finish that chapter and go to the next one. Because it's too technical and complicated and brain puzzling. But there's a purpose behind it. Sankhya has a purpose. He's explaining now the purpose, this knowledge and detachment to permit one to engage in undivided devotional service. Thus his mind and consciousness will be under full control. One has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to the platform of unalloyed devotional service by chanting and hearing about me. The transcendental knowledge, just like Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, transcendental knowledge chapter, and all the other items of knowledge, it's not theoretical. It's, you know, reading a Bhagavad Gita is not an exercise of jnana, like some people think. It's to prepare devotional service, because the whole of Bhagavad Gita is about devotional service. And sarva dharmam paritya jamami kam sharanam braja. All of the messages of Bhagavad Gita lead to that. It doesn't mean, okay, we abandon reading Bhagavad Gita, or we abandon contemplating chapter 26. We just like get on with the devotional service program. There's this one, I'm a little reluctant even to make reference, but that this one sannyasi that was caught with his disciples, female disciples. But there's this one sannyasi who was teaching Raghunuga Bhakti. Like, you know, and the message was, you don't need any rules and regulations, you just do Raghunuga Bhakti. And so one of our devotees attended one of his programs, and it wasn't like even a well-educated devotee, kind of like a simple devotee. And one of his sannyasinis was giving the class. And after the class, there was questions, and the person raised his hand and said, could you go over that again? Is what you're saying, you can eat meat, have illicit sex, take intoxication, and gamble, and that's okay, just do Raghunuga Bhakti. She got flustered. She didn't answer the question. He was embarrassed. So the regulations that are along the line of cleaning misconceptions from the mind and establishing the spiritual conception properly, it's valuable not just one time but again and again and again. You know, like, do you clean your kitchen once and that's it? You don't clean your kitchen again because you did it once. You clean your kitchen regularly, or you cleanse the mind regularly. And again and again, because we're in a toxic atmosphere, you clean again and again. And further refine the spiritual conception, so that the contemplation upon Krishna in devotion can become stronger and stronger. You know, no filters, no clouds and mist, just a pure transmission of contemplation upon the object. Text 7, we're going to be covering 11 and 12, so I'm just doing the background here. But it's very nice. In executing devotional service, one has to see every living entity equally, without enmity towards anyone, yet without intimate connections with anyone. One has to observe celibacy, be grave, and execute his eternal activities. That's, you know, the internal cultivation along with the external observance of duties. Remember that from yesterday? The mukhya and the gauna, primary and secondary. And execute his external eternal activities, offering the results to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And no, nice grahasta instructions. For his income, a devotee should be satisfied with what he earns without great difficulty. I remember giving the class on this one. There was lots of discussion on this topic. He should not eat more than what is necessary. He should live in a secluded place, like Seattle. And always be thoughtful, peaceful, friendly, compassionate, and self-realized. Text 9. One's seeing power should be increased through knowledge of spirit and matter, and one should not unnecessarily identify himself with the body and thus become attracted by bodily relationships. Now he's speaking to his mother. It's similar to, very close to Queen Kunti's prayer about removing the material attachment, the material portion of her attachment to the Pandavas and the Rishnis, to her sons and to her father's family. Remove the material portion of that attachment, so it leaves only the spiritual attachment. And the spiritual attachment then allows, certainly, that duties in the world and of the world can be performed in Krishna consciousness. And if Krishna consciousness is not there, then duties are performed in a different consciousness. And it leads to attachment, and attachment leads to suffering. And we don't like suffering, but we like being attached. I think it's nice. The transcendental position of being spiritually attached and theistically or religiously involved with the affairs of this world for further purification. This is is an important, subtle, delicate, essential part of becoming Krishna conscious, from the covered to the uncovered condition. So the instructions are here, wonderful purports. Text 10. One should be situated in the transcendental position beyond the stages of material consciousness and should be aloof from all other conceptions of life. Thus realizing freedom from false ego, one should see his own self just as he sees the sun in the sky. I guess similar metaphor as the previous one. Certainly we're not the sun in the sky. But as one sees the sun in the sky, one should see oneself. And then let's go to the next 11 and 12. I'll read the Sanskrit. Muktalingam sad abhasam asati pratipadyate sato bandhum asach chakshu sarvanus yutam advayam. Translation. A liberated soul. The devotional service just went to a real high position. A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality of Godhead, who is transcendental and who is manifest as a reflection, even in the false ego. Interesting purport. He is the support of the material cause. Sound familiar? He's the support and basis of everything. He is the support of the material cause, and he enters into everything. He is absolute, one without a second, and he is the eye, the eyes of the illusory energy. purport. A pure devotee can see the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything materially manifested. Which is really important because we're in a sea of matter. We're drowning in a sea of matter. Any direction you look, up, down, sideways, left and right, we're in a sea of matter. Supposing we only see this sea of matter and we're drowning in the sea of matter. It's helpless, crying out, help, and drowning in the sea of matter. But a devotee isn't drowning, nor is he only seeing the sea of matter, he's seeing Krishna. And he's seeing Krishna even in false ego, because where does it come from? He, that's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is present there only as a reflection, but a pure devotee can realize that in the darkness of material illusion, the only light is the Supreme Lord who is its support. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that the background of the material manifestation is Lord Krishna. And, as is confirmed in Brahma Samhita, Krishna is the cause of all causes. Then the next sentence is another Brahma Samhita verse. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, in the Brahma Samhita it is stated that the Supreme Lord, by his partial or plenary expansion, is present not only within this universe and each and every universe, but in every atom. Although he is one without a second, the word advayam, quote, without a second, which is used in this verse, indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is represented in everything, including the atoms, he is not divided. There's however many people seated here. We discussed this over the seminar period, so let's say, 20-something people. And there's one super soul. Although he's situated in the heart of everyone, he's not multiple super souls, unlike 20-something super souls. Interesting. One super soul. Something like that, you know, the discussion of the Brahmas going to Dwarka. There's one Krishna. Of course, Krishna can manifest himself in multiple Krishnas to perform rasa dance and so on, but it's still only one Krishna. And his Dwarka, his abode, it's Dwarka. Whether it's in that Svetadvip portion of Goloka or in this Boma Lila Dwarka, it's one Dwarka. It's the same. So the Dwarka that's in the different universes, it's one Dwarka and it's one Krishna. Like that. Although variously manifest, he's one. He's an Advayam. It's a brain puzzler. It, you know, from the binary processor of the mind, it's either a one or a zero. It's not one and zero. It can't be, you know, you get the idea. But it is one and zero simultaneously. It's beyond material duality. It's beyond the mind to conceive of. He's Advayam. He's not dual. Not divided. Although he's variously manifested. His presence in everything is explained in the next verse. That's why I combined the two. Text 12. The presence of the Supreme Lord can be realized just as, here's the metaphor again, The sun is realized first as a reflection on water and again as a second reflection on the wall of a room, although the sun itself is situated in the sky. Purport. The example given herewith is perfect. The sun is situated in the sky, far, far away from the surface of the earth. But its reflection can be seen in a pot of water in the corner of a room. The room is dark, and the sun is far away in the sky, but the sun's reflection on the water, the sun's reflection on the water illuminates the room, which is dark. A pure devotee can realize the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything, including false ego from the previous verse, by the reflection of his energy. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that as the presence of fire is understood by heat and light, so the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although one without a second, is perceived everywhere by the diffusion of his different energies. I have that verse so we can look at it in just a moment. It is confirmed in the Ishopanishad that the presence of the Lord is perceived everywhere by the liberated soul, just as the sunshine and the reflection can be perceived everywhere, although the sun is situated far away from the surface of the globe. Kapila Dev is the two kind of avatars, Shaktivesh avatar and Yuga avatar. Empowered living entity, Shaktivesh avatar, giving transcendental knowledge. He's also Yuga avatar in Satyayuga. He's at the very early stage of Satyayuga, teaching the process of Dhyan or Dhyayate. But again, some of you came a little later. The meditation process doesn't mean it's not devotional service. It's meditation in devotional service. And to properly meditate, one has to have a spiritual conception, and that means one has to be relieved of material conception, and so the Sankhya process is there for help for that purpose. It helps to cleanse the mind in that way through Sankhya. Just as Krishna and Bhagavad Gita has, there's three sections of Sankhya directly within Bhagavad Gita. So, here's the Sanskrit of that Vishnu Purana verse. Maybe you recognize it. Ekadesha satasya gir jyotsnya vistarani yata parasha brahmana shaktis tateidam akilam jagat. From this verse, the phrase that Prabhupada would regularly refer to is that third part, Parasya Brahmana Shaktis. In many ways, he would use it, but commonly it was the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a person. You know, just like our pranam mantra for Srila Prabhupada. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pastyatya Desatarine. He specifically, he identified that pranam mantra, wasn't his followers. He was establishing a serious part of his mission to give Krishna consciousness to the world according to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He made strong emphasis repeatedly over and over again on removing the misconceptions of impersonalism and voidism. Removing misconceptions in order to establish the proper conception. Because if you're holding on to a misconception very tightly, even when you hear bhakti message, the hand is still holding on to the impersonal conception. So, regularly, repeatedly, again and again, and this is Parashya Brahmana Shaktis. The Supreme Bhagavan has shaktis. He has unlimited opulences. Jiva Goswami's way of saying this is, there's no question of understanding God without understanding that he has unlimited inconceivable potencies. And conversely, if you understand he has and accept that he has unlimited inconceivable potencies, then it's very easy to understand him. Because the him is a personal pronoun, and otherwise it becomes it. You know, the Saha of Vedanta Sutra, it's a pronoun. That. So the absolute truth, Brahman. So if you don't accept the personality of Godhead has unlimited and inconceivable potencies, Saha becomes, impersonal Brahman. So it's necessary, essential, to understand unlimited, inconceivable potencies, and then hearing about, like the Sankhya section previously, of the unlimited, inconceivable potencies, hear some of them. The varieties go like this and that, and the other thing. And, like your question, supposing one doesn't understand all these details of this and that and the other thing, does that prevent you from going back to Godhead? No. Bhakti is sufficient, but bhakti is assisted by those other things, and so those other things are there. It's elaborate appreciation of how wonderful is my Krishna. How wonderful is my Krishna. So without the detailed knowledge, there's the Old Testament that says, God said, let there be light, and so there was, and it was good. Okay, that's nice. And then, God said, let there be this and that, and so it was. And it's true. Not untrue. But then along comes, Mr. Scientist, who says, it's not true. rubbish. I'm going to prove you wrong. We're going to make this and make that without God. Anyway, the program. With an explicit atheistic mentality. This college student that came from Boston, Yuli, the Chinese girl, said, it's going to be a challenge when she goes back to China, because from little, in the education system in China, it's explicit. It's not indirect. Like here, it's indirect. Because, Christianity is really strong, so they can't just say there's no God. But in China, it's explicit. There is no God. Go to public school. There's no God. There's science. Here's the science. And don't forget, there's no God. It promotes, atheism and the communistic way and productivity. And look at, kaboom, the economy's gone, kaboom. So she was saying, it's going to be very difficult to take this message back, when I go back to China and give it. So, which is true. And, it's the same thing that Prabhupada said, that the greatest challenge to presenting Krishna consciousness in the world, because he was a world acharya, is the stubborn, blind faith that people have in mechanistic science, because science has given them this and that and the other thing. So if a scientist says blah blah, then it's got to be blah blah, you know, Big Bang and the whole thing, because, you know, look what science has done. How could they be wrong? You get the idea. So advancement of technology it's what the world is chasing. And, you know, many of the persons in the room, you have been encouraged, and your livelihood is based on it. Now, so there's a challenge. Where's God in this picture? And do we really need, I mean, not necessarily you're doubting that, but it's the medium in which you work and live, and, you know, the world in which we live, and so where does God fit into this picture? So Sankhya really helps. And I know how to see God in the picture. Here's what Kapila is saying, is you can see God even in false ego. And he gives this very nice explanation or metaphor. Dark room, sun in the sky. The sun shines on a pot of water in the dark room. So there's a reflection of the sun on the pot, surface of the pot of water. And then that reflection shines into the room, onto the wall. Although the room is not completely dark, because otherwise it's not going to come through the window. It's not totally dark, but say a dark room. And there's light on the pot, and there's light on a reflection of the pot onto the wall. So it's implied, it's implicit. That light that's on the wall indicates there's a sun. The reflection of the light in the pot indicates there's a sun. And you can take it further and further abstractions, which is what Sankhya does. You know, this comes from that, comes from that, comes from that, comes from that, comes from that. The unfolding of the elements. But where does it all start? It starts with the cause of all causes. Where does matter come from? The cause of all causes. As Prabhupada is saying in the purport, it's not only in the purport, it's in the verse. He is the support of the material cause. So, material cause. Behind the material cause, there's a spiritual cause. So, if you're an atheist, or if you're a mechanistic scientist, here's the proposition. There's only one thing. The material cause. There's matter, and the laws that govern matter, and there's nothing else. Prove me wrong. Kind of like, you know, well, what about the other way? All there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His energies. Prove me wrong. That's what Prabhupada did. You know, you're making your proposition, I'll make mine. Why do I have to prove you wrong? You prove me wrong. What's your authority that I have to prove you wrong? And then it's, you know, it's a stalemate, because they can't prove there's no God, and we can't prove. We can give indication, especially through devotion. One can give indication. Here's a reflection of the sun on the pot. It indicates there's a sun. And then they'll say, well, it could be something else. It's just matter and the laws governing matter. You get the idea. And again, it's tarka apratishta. By logic and reason, you can't establish finitely or firmly anything. Whether it's, you know, there's God or there's no God, you can't finitely produce or conclude. or anything. It's inconclusive. And that's the program. Someone, exactly how Prabhupada describes. Someone comes along with a theory. And to come along with a theory, you have to do two things. Be creative and come up with a new one and refute the other ones. And then you're heralded. And then somebody else comes along that's a better logician, refutes yours and comes up with another one. It's exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Nimai Pandit did in his childhood. He would go all over the place and say, I have a proposition, prove me wrong. And someone would say something, oh, I can't prove you wrong. And then he would prove it wrong and establish something else. Now prove that one wrong. I can't prove it wrong. And then he would prove that one wrong and go back to the first one and prove it right. prove this wrong. And then, you know, then you come up with the third one. You prove it wrong and come up with the third one. By Leela establishing Tarka Pratishtha, logic and reason is inconclusive. About anything. Anything. So while somebody has like a strong argument, they're a good logician, it looks like, wow, it's bulletproof. There's no holes. Because someone else may not be as good a logician. I forget his name, that contemporary fellow from England that's the super atheist. Hawkins or Dawkins?
Dawkins.
Dawkins? Yes?
Yes.
Not the one in the wheelchair. Dawkins. So, I was curious, who is this guy? So I, you know, did what everybody else does. You Google his name. And they have all these videos, and you know, there's a video of how he became. You know, what, there's a, you know, like his little documentary of how, you know, when he was a little boy, da 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 da, and then he went to school, da 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 da, and you know, then he, now he's an adult, and he's interacting with people, and you know, on stage with thousands of people in the audience, and you know, doing his thing. So one little passage struck me. You know, a little short video clip. He's like raising his voice, saying, "Where is the proof? Show me the proof." Well, we could say the same thing. You know, show me the proof. Because it. Well, this, but you know, this could mean that instead of this. Girls. The message that we're getting here is, although one may not be able to see the sun, one can know the presence of the sun. One may not be able to see Krishna, but one can know the presence of Krishna by the reflection, the potencies of Krishna, the all-pervasive potencies of Krishna. And again, by inference, on the authority of Scripture, although he's advayam, he's not divided, he's present everywhere. So another common Vedic example is put out many pots of water, and in the surface of the many pots of water, what do you see? Many suns. But we know there's only one sun, not there's many suns. Similarly, the super soul who's within the heart of every living being, super soul who's within the heart of every living being is one, although variously situated, he's undivided. Using that example, one can understand it. And then there's the authority, ultimately the authority of Scripture, not just the logic or the example giving. And then through devotion, which by mystic yoga one may be able to see the personality of Godhead within the heart. And that's ecstatic, a certain kind of ecstatic. And then there's a greater ecstatic, and that's of being in service to the Supreme in devotion, and then one can factually see the presence of Krishna everywhere. I'll say it again. One can factually see the presence of Krishna everywhere. And we know from Brahma Samhita, how is that? Through the eye of devotion. One can see the presence of Krishna everywhere. Not just, you know, a theory, but one can see the presence of Krishna everywhere. You know, there's some work, some spiritual work that needs to be done to come to that stage. And just a last little message here. Just see how Prabhupada is quoting in this section two verses from Brahma Samhita. It's like, I shared this at the beginning of the seminar, but a learned scholarly devotee was curious, who did Prabhupada quote the most? And of course, he also quotes Bhagavad Gita. That means quoting Krishna. But quoting Brahma Samhita, he's quoting Lord Brahma. So number one is Krishna, quoted. And number two is Lord Brahma. Brahma Samhita is quoted all the time. And there's a reason. It's like very fundamental and it's very compact and tight. So the two messages that he's quoting from, you know, Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the Sarva Karana Karanam, he's the cause of all causes. And the Supreme Lord, by his partial or plenary expansion, is present not only within the universe and each and every universe, but in every atom. We discussed that one also. And then this is helping, I mean, it's how do we use that in practical devotional service besides, you know, memorize the sloka and chant it. And then if asked or called upon, maybe give the meaning. And even beyond that, maybe give a little explanation of the meaning. Okay, so that's like the education part, but what about the application part? How do we apply that practically? It's right here. Kapila Dev is explaining to Devahuti, seeing Krishna. So there's this phrase, Shastra Chakshusa, seeing through the eyes of Scripture. When one becomes, you know, well acquainted with the ocean of truth, when one becomes purified by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam's message and these other devotional messages, Brahma Samhita and others, you start to see differently. You start to feel your presence in the world differently. Your life becomes transformed just through that. You know, what may initially seem like it, an academic exercise. What does this mean? How does that fit in with that? And the other thing? And, you know, just like anything that you do. Learning how to put food in your mouth, or learning how to type in a typewriter, or learning how to drive a car, or learning how to use your cell phone. I get bewildered by that one. It's got so many gadgets and gizmos. But then, once you know the procedures, it's just one, you know, don't even think about it. You just do the thing. You're living your life in conjunction with whatever that thing is that you've learned, how to drive your car. So how to live your life where you're seeing Krishna everywhere. Initially it's academic. It's theoretical. But the purpose of the theoretical is to transform consciousness. Relieve one of material conception, instead put in place the spiritual conception, how the transcendentalist sees things, and then see things as the transcendentalist sees things. And it starts to happen. And then you experience life differently. It's the same thing outside, but you experience it differently. And that means, you know, your experience inside is also different. The, you know, the struggle, daivihiyesha guna mayi mama maya duratya, it subsides. Instead, it's mameve prapadyante, mayame tantarantite. It's the same world that we're living in, it's just your experience of the world changes. If we try to properly apply in our day-to-day life. And we can see that Prabhupada would do that regularly. He would remark something regularly. It's just a worldly something. Because his consciousness was absorbed in Krishna, he would see that worldly something in relation to Krishna and relate it. And because of being attached to Krishna, and with that attachment to Krishna, what he would hear from Bhaktisiddhanta and hear from the scripture, he would see accordingly and then relate accordingly through absorption in Krishna and in devotion to Krishna. Everything was seen in that way. We practically experienced it universally. One's life changes into a life of devotion instead of a life of fruitive activity and sense gratification, where the mind is dragging us and the senses are dragging us and we're looking for the brake pedal and we're still getting dragged. Or we lose the brake pedal, we put in the gas pedal and go for it. It's attachment to Krishna, and then that leads to higher and higher things, you know, the raganuga bhakti stage. But that's not going to happen without, as we heard yesterday, without being freed from this, you know, material contamination. We have to do a little detox before we can become raganuga bhaktas, spontaneously attracted to Krishna. Hare Krishna. So any discussion or questions?
So Maharaj, in the tenth verse translation, says that one should see his own self just as he sees the sun in the sky. Can you just elaborate on this?
Well, you can read the purport, but what it is is, you know, self-realization and God-realization occurs simultaneously. There's two very simple ways. It's the dark of night and you don't have your, you know, lights on in your home, and you hold the mirror in front of your face. What do you see? Nothing, because it's dark of night. And then the light comes on. The sun rises and you look in the mirror and you see yourself and you see the sun. That's one. Then another is, you know, we're a tiny, fragmental part of the Supreme. So, it's spoken of in the second canto. One can understand the Supreme by the nature of oneself. We're conscious beings. Then the Supreme must also be a conscious being. We can understand. It's by inference, but on the authority of Scripture, we are a tiny sample of the Supreme. He is minus the imperfection and limitation, Bhaktisiddhanta's language, unwholesomeness of due to that contamination, but the spiritual conception. So either way, we regard Krishna, and then we can see something about ourselves, our true spiritual nature. Or, guided by Scripture, we can see something about ourselves and have some understanding of the Supreme. Either way. We're tiny samples of the Supreme. Something else? Yes?
I have a question related to something which you spoke about yesterday morning.
Okay.
Or maybe the day before that. This is about the importance of given the Janma as compared to Guna and Karma in the previous ages more.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say some of my understanding and see if we could guide me further in that. This, my understanding was that in the previous ages, because people, there is two things, nature and nurture. One is what soul gets attracted to a certain family and how they are nurtured. I was thinking in previous ages, because people were following the samskaras, like Garbhadhan samskar, etc., the soul will get attracted to a Brahmana family, would probably be of that nature, and will also be cultured that way in their lifetimes.
Yes. Yes.
So Janma was very much in accordance with Guna and Karma, and now it's not the case.
Correct. Correct. Anything else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, we discussed yesterday also about Shishupal and before also during our seminar. Yesterday during the lecture you mentioned that because he was all the time meditating on Krishna, his material,
and calling his name.
In calling his name. So his material contamination was removed. But I was thinking one thing that how does his consciousness change? Because he was so against Krishna.
He was so against Krishna.
And then he went back to Jaya Vijaya position, and there he was serving as a servitor. So it was quite a change or a contrast in the consciousness.
Well, the material, it's two things. There's the, you know, there's the deeper thing. Maybe we should do the deeper thing first. In discussing the topic of Shishupal, the deeper thing is we should not forget how he became Shishupal. In his case, Jain Vijay. So they went back because they're Jain Vijay. They went back to their post as the gatekeeper. If you look really closely on at that poster, you know, in the quadrangular region of Vaikuntha, there's the quadrangular region of Goloka. In the quadrangular region of Vaikuntha, they're on one side, Jai and Vijay. You know, that one of, and there's other names at the other entrances. So that's their position. So they returned to their position because they were just doing some service. The Acharyas explained. So this is deeper. They did the service of coming into this realm as demons to provide a service for Narayana of Vaikuntha, so he could have someone who he could have combat with. So they prayed, if you so desire, we can do that service. So that's the deeper. When we hear, you know, so they return to that position because that's their position after completing their service. So now we'll go to the, you know, the other way of looking at things. His consciousness, the spirit of scorn, forget the Sanskrit word that's in the sixth canto, of the abhas, where one calls Krishna's name in scorn, is a Sanskrit term. Does anybody know? Sixth canto. Anyway, so it's, his scorn didn't change. He continued right up to like the last. The scorn was there. So abhas continued right up to the end. But that namabhas, the point is being made by the Vishnu dutas to the Yamadutas. Even namabhas, it's still namabhas, it's not shuddha. But even namabhas frees one from the reactions of all one's sins. So he was freed from the reactions of his sins, but still, you know, of a disposition of scorn, which has to do with the deeper part. You know, he was in the position of being in opposition to Krishna. And that's in that purport that we that I read. Adilila chapter 6, verse 79. You can go look at it later again. But it's, you know, it's Parashramoni describing to Maitreya, I think, you know, how is it possible? Why is it that previously, like when killed by Lord Nrisimhadev and then killed by Ram, they didn't achieve liberation, but when killed by Krishna, they achieved liberation. And you know, it's the superlative position of Krishna, is what Parashramuni says. And the power of the holy name. So it's not like Ravana never called Ram's name, but Shishupal was constantly calling his name in scorn and derision. So he benefited by that Sayuja. But Sayuja is not, there's no bhakti. It's just the reactions of sins were neutralized, taken away. So that's Sayuja. It's neither here nor there. So their returning has to do with the deeper understanding. Otherwise, you know, Sayuja Mukti. And what happens to those who are in that position of Sayuja Mukti after some time? Aruya Krishchena Parampadam Tada. They come back again. And he didn't because of his previous position. Is that okay?
Maharaj, if our consciousness, we are trying to change it,
good,
but we are chanting Lord's name, so will chanting will definitely help us change the,
yes,
consciousness? And if our consciousness is not,
well,
it's
what has to, along with chanting, it's no small matter to chant. It's also no small matter to try to avoid offenses while chanting. So we strive to overcome offenses, and we know the 10 in number, and we strive to overcome them. And the root of all of them is inattentiveness. So we strive particularly to be attentive. And we know that's a struggle. But if we're striving, then that's the clearing. And that, not just the chanting, certainly the chanting of any kind, but chanting where we're striving to become free from offenses, and try to do that, try to be fully attentive. On our own effort, it's not possible. That's a nice realization. When you really try, you really realize it's not possible. So then in that mood of calling or descending mercy, makes all the difference. In reaching the stage of fully attentive and offenseless chanting, helplessly calling out. But even the other kind, not helplessly calling out, just chanting because of duty. Yes, it's beneficial. But the further we go towards trying to overcome the offenses, the abhas effort, the shadow into the shuddha stage, striving for that shuddha stage, rather than being complacent, well, I'm chanting, but striving for the shuddha stage, then, and that's by this full attentiveness. And where does your attention go? It goes to that which you value. Yes.
Related to the question and the answer that you gave, when you're practicing Krishna consciousness, and if you've done something a little bit properly, there's mercy, and some of our base qualities are revealed to us, some qualities that I didn't know I had, which are not good for my relationship with devotees, which are not good for my Krishna consciousness, then what is the proper attitude for me to deal with those? What is the thought process I need to have? How do I work with those things, deal with those things?
Good. Very, very good question.
And then the second question I have is, in answer to one of my questions, you had talked about patience.
Can you say the second question? Let me answer the first one. Yeah, I like it. I want to. You won't forget the second one, right? Okay. Well, the two main things are humility. No, we don't like to be humble. We like to feel good about ourselves, you know, in a false way. So the tendency would be, you know, to run and hide, or take the thing and tuck it under the rug, and it's still there, but it's just like no one's noticing, and even I'm not noticing because I don't like to look at it. Then it can go the other way, you know, we become obsessed, oh, I'm bad, and so, you know, lamentation and moroseness and mode of ignorance. So we don't do either one. So what do? Well, be aware of both of those tendencies and check those two tendencies, and then you stay with it. You know, this is in my heart. This, and then as you stay with it, something that happens is, my goodness, it's not only there, but it's affecting, it's pervasive. It's affecting this and that and the other thing, and my goodness, my badness, my contamination. So then you're aware. So you stay with it, and you become more keenly aware. So it's something like, you know, cleaning a pot. Or, you know, learning cleanliness. Some devotees don't have a clue about cleanliness. But they think it's clean. And it's like, what? You know. So if the light comes on, you know, I don't know what cleanliness is. I better learn what cleanliness is. So then I go to someone who can, because otherwise my standard of cleanliness stays in the same space. I want to associate with somebody, take guidance from somebody, what's cleanliness? And then maintain it, not just like clean the kitchen once and 2 months from now I'll go back and clean it again. Otherwise it's kind of like super. So keeping things clean is part of mode of goodness. And even to know what the standard of cleanliness is. Like Prabhupada spoke about this. I mean, it's not my experience because I didn't associate with Prabhupada in this way, but Hari Sori and Hari Kesh and those that did, Prabhupada was really strict. His standard of cleanliness was awesome. And he wasn't like, you know, a whatever the word is, a phobic kind of person. He was just, he had a standard of cleanliness. And those that were associating with him, I mean, just as an example, I remember having it, being in a GBC meeting and having to go to some little discussion in a room where Hari Kesh was staying, and he folded his palms before we came in and said, you know, I'm sorry, but I've been trained by Prabhupada, and it just, you know, I can't have you bring anything in here. Please forgive me in advance. Because our standard of cleanliness is not the standard of cleanliness that Prabhupada gave. Just don't bring anything in. Besides, you know, like not only leave your shoes, but don't bring any, you know, I'm not going to serve beverages or anything. Because how we do the things that we do, it's just like, I can't help it. I was trained by Prabhupada. And I remember similarly Hari Sori saying how Prabhupada was training him in cleanliness. And I can't remember the details, but it was something like he was serving Prabhupada and he was bringing the meal that the cook had cooked and putting it in Prabhupada's room on the desk or the table, little special little table where he took his meal. And then he brought something else, and, you know, he scratched his head or something like that, and then, you know, and Prabhupada said, you know, he softly said, don't do like that, and explained to him what and why. So, you know, and then something similar happened later, not exact thing, but something similar. And then Prabhupada blasted him. And he said, it was Prabhupada's standard procedure. If you don't understand, he'll give an instruction. And then he would expect that you would follow the instruction. And he didn't expect it to happen a second time. And if it happened a second time, then he exploded. And then the third time, he just, like, you know, he said Prabhupada's lip would tremble. That was like an indication he was really angry. And, you know, and Hari Sari said, I cried. I said, Prabhupada, what can I do? I'm a mlecha. I can't follow your standards. I want to, but I can't meet your standards. So that's like Prabhupada's standards of cleanliness. And then we'll come, you know, down to like a worldly standard of cleanliness. And, you know, brahminical means clean. So supposing the light goes on and I realize, gee, I'm not so clean. Like, you know, something that's inside that I recognize as. So what do? You associate with somebody that has a standard of cleanliness that's better than yours or superlative. And take their association and have them help you, etc., etc. And then, like, stay with it and stay with it and stay with it until, like, your standard becomes a clean standard. So similarly with this other. So you stay with it. Don't tuck it under the rug or run and hide or close your eyes or... And don't obsess. Just recognize this is something that's needed and you'll see how it's there, pervasive. And then so that's what to do and what not to do. And then the second part is the calling for descending mercy. And then, you know, one can then understand, my goodness, it's not just this one thing that I didn't know that was there. I'm sure there's like a whole bunch of other things that I don't know that they're there. And, you know, what am I going to do when that stuff becomes disclosed? Well, worry about that when that stuff gets disclosed. And for now, the microphone, okay. For now, let me just focus on this one thing. And with calling out to Krishna. And I'm going to say a third thing, especially is the chanting of the holy name. That's our primary means of deliverance for this age. So those three things. Your second question?
No,
but... You're not going to forget your second question. Okay.
So, is it also suggested that we can think like we don't identify with our negative qualities so much?
Yes.
That I'm not this body.
Yes. And certainly. That checks the mode of ignorance tendency. Oh, woe is me. And lamenting and sadness and lethargy, boo-hoo, and, you know, all those things.
And as you said, depend upon Krishna and descending mercy.
Yes, yes. Second question?
So the second question is about just the proper application of patience.
Proper application of patience.
Patience. What is patience in this? Because these base qualities that have been revealed and that will be revealed in the future, they are there and they are blocking us from expressing ourselves fully in service to Krishna. And then while that desire is there to serve Krishna properly, but then these qualities are also there. So maybe staying with it is the patience, proper application of patience that is described in Nectar of
Krishna. Well, there's a particular dimension of patience is not just like stay with it. The particular dimension is letting go of the fruitive mentality, the doership mentality. Patience is turning to Krishna for his descending mercy, along with whatever endeavors we may make. That is, serving in a humble mood where I'm depending on descending mercy. That's patience. The absence of patience is, I'm the doer, here I come. Complacency is, I'll do it later. Maybe. And passion is, I'm going to do it. And patience is, I'm going to make an earnest and honest and sustained effort, and I'm not going to stop or become an anxiety or any of those other kinds of negative feelings because of patience. Like, you know, utsahan nischayat daryat. Because I have confidence, conviction in the process of bhakti, there's patience. That's where I repose my soul and continue to endeavor patiently with firm confidence that the process of bhakti is going to cleanse me. It's pure and I'm not, and I'm reaching with whatever devotion I have towards the descending mercy of Krishna. And patience is, I know it will come because I have firm conviction. Therefore, patience with a sustained effort. There's my part and there's Krishna's part, and we'll make a good team. Together it'll be possible. It's faith in Krishna and the process of bhakti to reach him. That's patience. The outcome will come in due course of time. It may be quicker, it may be longer, maybe somewhere in between. It will come. Confidence in the place of shelter and the medium of reaching that place of shelter. That's patience. It's not just staying with the unwanted thing. It's more.
May I ask one more question? So, Maharaj, in relation with what Devadashi Mataji said about not identifying with those negative qualities, understanding this is...
That's a covering.
That's a covering, but I have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Then also, is this the way in which if we deal with it for ourselves like that, then that's how we will be compassionate to others also? Or there are some more elements that need to be there when we're dealing with
Well, you cannot be compassionate to others if you're not being compassionate with yourself. You'll be hard on others unless that art of what we're describing is there. Or there can be the distorted reflection of what compassion is. It's just not really compassion. I'll be nice to, anyways. I'll say please and thank you. I'll be polite in my social dealings, but that's without the real essence. The real compassion is the soul is covered and something is needed to make the soul free from that covering. And it's not like I'm going to go do it and rescue this other person. That's a false kind of compassion. Or I'll just be nice and I won't say anything, and that's compassion. Or I'll help their material situation without any consideration of the spiritual complexity of being implicated in matter. I'll extend a helping hand, and that's my compassion, while they stay in darkness of ignorance.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, Maharaj, we hear in Srimad Bhagavatam that every one of us have these four defects. So
yeah.
We are subject to illusion.
Yes. Yes.
Other is we do commit mistakes.
Yeah.
But then in practical, when we encounter these things, let's say we know that somebody has done some mistake, but immediately we come to a conclusion without having the complete information, we come to a conclusion about that person. So how can we avoid those things happening in the congregation? Like, is we know the fact that, okay, we are having these defects, but we forget that we are having these defects and we immediately get into the illusion, okay, we come to an idea that, okay, this person has done this and so on.
Well, you know, knowledge and devotion. Knowledge, goodness and devotion. Knowledge is a component of goodness, but, you know, rather than react, you pause. You go into a reflective place, and you then in a reflective place, you're not reacting to something and judging something. You're in a reflective space. And then the devotion. How can I be best of service? Well, I don't even have complete information. So it says motive goodness and then devotion. I wish to be in service. Passion and ignorance generally rule our lives. I'm going to fix the situation, but I don't even know what the situation is. I'm going to be the judge, the jury, the police officer, and everything else. Motive goodness and devotion. Learn just, you know, one, two. And so, in that mode of goodness pause, I may not have a clear idea of lots of things. But, you know, the other thing that you were describing is checked. It's not going to rule my life. Passion and ignorance is not going to rule my life. No, thank you. And I'll continue to be patient and try to call for Krishna, if he so wishes, to help illumine me. Or just leave things in Krishna's hands. I mean, sometimes that disturbs people. I'll just go back and say, this is a lesson that I learned from Burija. I've shared this before, but we were in Vrindavan teaching at the VIAG, which he was in charge of. This was, I don't know, 15 years ago or whatever it was. And we would take prasadam together every day. And, you know, it's nice having his association. Very nice. So something came up, like it comes up. And we were talking about the something, and I was asking, you know, Bhujan, what should we do? And, you know, one of his pearls of wisdom lessons was shared. He said, there are some things, and I think this is one of those things, where we just have to let Krishna take care of it. It's a situation where it's a relationship between this person and Krishna, and it's about their relationship. So it's not our business to go and, like, fix the relationship or the manifestations of the problem that are indicative of a relationship problem between the person and Krishna. Just, you know, allow Krishna to do Krishna's thing rather than trying to do Krishna's thing. There are certainly things that are meant for us to do in a mood of service. And if we're not clear, then, you know, don't obsess and try to, like, do this other thing. Now, another comment is, so from having learned that lesson, and of course that's so many years ago, I've learned when it doesn't apply, when it does apply, a little bit, anyways. And so, some cases, I don't act on something. And people, you know, let me know, I do something. You're the GBC, you gotta do something. If you don't do something, what about the rest of us? So, sometimes that's appropriate. Sometimes doing something is appropriate. It takes guidance of super soul and a very clear consciousness to know what the situation is and what to do. And if you don't, you know, just go bungling into the situation and make it further a mess. You become part of the problem rather than part of the solution.
One more thing in addition to this.
Why not?
Nav Kishori Mataji once in our class, she discussed the Chitraketu pastime. And in that, where Chitraketu and Lord Shiva, which we discussed in the seminar also, and Mother Parvati got upset with that.
Yeah, yeah.
And during the discussion, it was brought up that when we see conversation or something between two Vaishnavas, it's always better to just stay aside, not to intervene in that.
It's not always better.
So my practical thing is, if we see that there are Vaishnavas and they have a point of difference, what will be the practical application for us? Because it's hurting for us.
Yeah, well, I already answered that question. Go into a mode of goodness place. Pause. Feel really comfortable in the paused place, rather than I got to do something, I got to judge the thing, and I got to find out about what's going on. And rah, rah, rah. So, rather than the passion, mode of goodness, and reflect. What is the proper service position for me? Well, when you're in the mode of goodness, then you awaken the service mood, humble service mood. Is there something for me to do? What might I do in service to Krishna? What does Krishna want of me? Not the mode of passion. It's a challenge to not be in the mode of passion. We like the mode of passion. That's what this plane of existence is. The earthly realm is the mode of passion, according to Bhagavad Gita. The mode of goodness is the heaven. The mode of passion is here. The mode of ignorance is the lower planetary regions. So we like, you know, to do something. So it's sometimes like uncomfortable to not do something. But at least, you know, those two things. Same answer. It's practical. And stay in that position until there's the position of service, what is appropriate for me to do, becomes clear. And there's you can make a list. This is what Brajavihari does all the time. And because he's trained. He's a superlative resource for ISKCON. Anyway, just my respect and appreciation for him. He continues to grow and grow and grow. He's gifted. Besides, he knows his stuff. He's guided by super soul, in my opinion, and understanding how to address things. So one of the things that part of his training says, so he does it, is he'll sit with the person that's feeling rah, 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 and he'll then, they have a conflict, or a perceived conflict. And then he'll, try to get them into that reflective space and then give them a list of options. You know, the person wants, I want a solution. And he won't do that. He won't go to the solution. He'll say, here's some options. What makes sense to you? And then you explore this one, explore that one. You eliminate some of them, and you got some left. And then you have a path of action. But the action should be in the service mode. Anyway, that's something that one can do. What are some of the things that I could do? And if you're not clear, don't jump. Become clear, as clear as you can be. And otherwise, wait for the prompt from Super Soul to say something in the mode of goodness as a servant, not as something else, mode of ignorance and mode of passion. I'm going to go fix this. It's not easy. You know, it's a difficult place we live in. Kali Yuga too, on top of it. Yes?
My mind is sort of extension to the response that you gave for the previous question. But you know, this is just my own personal experience also. I think when you talk about the two sides, about how when we find the qualities within us which are not suitable for progress in devotional service, the one side is that we are too proud and we think even if these qualities are there, it doesn't matter, right? I'm okay. That's one side. But my sort of experience is, and I think a lot of devotees will be facing this also, that because we hear so much about good qualities, many times we may not go that side. So we might know to be humble, to be nicer, respectful, all of those things are good things we need to have. So I see those things within myself. I may not go that side, but I want to put them under the rug because I'm very likely to go to this other side.
Which is?
That I feel very bad about myself. I'm not compassionate to myself when I see these qualities within myself. So I feel reject myself in one sense. So not accepting myself, not being compassionate to myself.
Yeah, okay.
And because I can't stay in that, as you said, stay with it, I'm not able to stay with my own self when I see these qualities. So I might talk everything from outside, but I'm not really accepting myself within my current position. And then I'm not able to change also because I'm not compassionate to my own self.
Okay, well.
So this is it's a difficult position to be in. So, you know, that thinking about guidance and how I accept myself in my current position in a way which is conducive for me to move forward.
Well, the modes of nature and the mind puts us like, you know, the ping pong ball in a ping pong ball tournament, and so, you know, the paddle over here and a paddle over there and a paddle over here and a paddle over there. So it's exhausting. So that side, the other side of, you know, self-deprecation, that's the mode of ignorance. So don't surrender to the mode of ignorance. Is there an alternative? Yes, there's an alternative. What's that? Mode of goodness. Oh. What's the mode of goodness? So we do the mode of goodness program instead of the ignorance and passion program. And so, what's that? The language you can change easily, but the language that I just used, because it's a language that I've heard from persons who are experienced, trained professionals in trauma therapy. It's like an awful feeling, not just like I have this impurity. It's trauma. And the teaching is, you stay with it. It hurts, I don't want to stay with it. Stay with it. Because behind that, there's something. It's not just, you know, the feeling. It's this, what's behind it. You know, get the root and pull the root out. What's behind it? That thing that's not, you know. So, but it's, you know, you do that without a spiritual conception.
Yeah.
And you're in the soup. Like Jagatananda Pandit writes in Prema Vivarta, do not make the mistake of trying to cross a river with 1 foot and 2 boats. Ill-advised. Similarly, don't practice and cultivate spiritual life holding on to the material conception while trying to cultivate a spiritual conception and make spiritual progress. So when staying with it, there's a spiritual conception. I'm a spirit soul. I'm part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna loves me. Krishna will help me. And when I come before Krishna, I want him to smile. I'd like to be able to please Krishna. And I can please Krishna if I become pure, so let me become pure, rather than the beat yourself up self-deprecation program. It's not exactly, I mean, it's being self-compassionate, but, you know, it's the positive rather than, like, feel sorry for yourself.
Yeah.
It's the higher self-compassion, which is, let me make this connection with Krishna. That's real self-compassion, as with another person that may be struggling with something, not just like put your arm around them and pat them. But, you know, help them get beyond that contamination. And it's more than just have a conversation and then you go about your life. You commit it to the person. You know, like the two of you are committed to each other. I can only imagine hearing this little, the questioning thing. It, you know, there's things that she does and things that you do that irritate one another. And there are things about yourself that irritate yourselves. You know, about herself irritating herself. And so, but you're committed to one another. And, you know, the journey to Krishna is done together. So like that, stay in your relationship with Guru and Krishna and move. That's self-compassion. Not just, you know, pat yourself kind of self-compassion. And continue the journey to Krishna. Take the... Stay with... Yeah, you know, the same... Repeating the same message as to your wife. But, you know, Krishna's there, and your relationship with Krishna is there. He loves you. How can he love me? Because I have this...
Yeah.
You know, we just... It's that's the mode of ignorance. We block out Krishna. We're in darkness because we blocked out Krishna instead of in the light and shine the light on the darkness. You know, put the antiseptic on the infection. It may hurt, but it removes the infection. That's what antiseptics do. Striving, reaching toward Krishna. Krishna picks us up. If we don't reach toward Krishna, maybe, maybe not. You know, I guess they don't want me. They want to work this out themselves and be in Maya for a while. Okay, I won't interfere. Or maybe he'll interfere. Bang you on the head and say, you know, turn to me. Okay, I'm going to end because of time. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. Keep.